friend Rissa, we were working on like the movies, just because we're like, yeah, doing all of the show, that's a tremendous undertaking. I don't got that in me. But then when Kaiser brought it up, like, and you guys asked me if I'd want to be part of it, I said, okay, two conditions. I get to play Vegeta because I hadn't gotten a chance yet.
Because you're the one to play Vegeta.
Yes, I did. And I get to be on the writing team. And here we are, and almost 9 years later.
Yeah, and I remember that night we ended up scripting a lot of jokes. And we're just like, oh, wow, yeah,
we came up with the dynamic between Nappa and Vegeta and the idea for Ghost Nappa that night.
it was just what was really amazing. I'll always remember that scripting session. It was like three people who had never worked together sat down and just started pitching jokes.
Yeah, just kind of coming together, because none of us had, like, except for you, like, you worked in a team.
But I worked with another writer, but, yeah. Like, honestly, and you had worked on the movie slightly in another writing team, but it was almost like a match made in heaven, because after all the years, I can actually attest to the fact that the three of us are so vastly different as writers that when we come together,
it just kind of works out.
It kind of boils all of the cringiness out of each of our individual styles, and we get this, like, really pleasant middle-of-the-road style, and then Kaiser cuts our jokes.
Yep. And then he rewrites the entire thing and just goes from there.
you think we're kidding a little, but there's been moments.
There's truth to every joke.
We love him, though.
So how did you guys, like, get into voice acting?
I come from, like, a radio background, so it was kind of in my blood.
It's in the family.
Yeah, it's in the family. What really got me interested in it was when I was in theater in high school, my school did a production of Little Shop of Horrors. I got cast as the voice for the plant, Audrey 2. You know, I would sit back there, deliver my lines, and realize, holy crap, this is a lot of fun. I get to act just with my voice. Also, I don't have to show up an hour early to get makeup done. I can show up with, like, a bag of Taco Bell, sit backstage, and just do whatever.
I just go, feed me in between.
Feed me, Seymour.
In between takes, just eat a piece of that Gordita crunch.
Literally behind, like, backstage at that show, I was sitting back there with my DS just playing Supersonic Warriors. Yeah, I just have this, like, little window that I look out so I can see what's going on around my area of the stage. And I was like, okay, here we go. My turn now. And then I just sit back down, eat a dick, Sal.
No, you eat a dick, Maurice.
That's what really got me into it. And from there, I just kind of pushed forward, eventually making Yu Yu Hakusho Bridge, kind of like, you know, taking that passion to the next step. And
after watching Little Karibos.
Yes.
No, Little Karibos.
Yu-Gi-Oh! Bridge, I think we can all say, is a basic inspiration for everything that we've kind of turned into.
If it weren't for Patient Zero, we wouldn't have been infected.
Nope, he was Patient Zero. From there, I just continued trying and trying, and eventually I started getting paid for it, so.
Yeah. Why stop now?
Yeah.
And your voiceover story is very different.
Yeah, mine started, like, when I was, you know, when you're a kid, you're always, like, doing impersonations of, like, Looney Tunes or whatever cartoons you're watching, right? So I used to do that a lot. And then back in middle school, my buddy got me, like, a little gooseneck microphone so we could, like, play CSGO or whatever.
Gooseneck!
Didn't happen. Instead, what happened was I took it and I found out there was, like, a sound recorder application on my computer at the time. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna try to do some, like, record some radio plays. And I just started doing it for, like, 2 summers, and I would just end up making, like, these little radio plays that were, like, half an hour long, and they were just, like, improv, like, impressions of different things. And then eventually I found YouTube.
Exist? Do they still exist?
Yeah, of course they still exist. I post them on SoundCloud. And then eventually I found my way to YouTube because I found a dub of, do you guys remember I'm the Juggernaut?
Yes. Yeah.
So that's what started it for me. I saw that. I was like, people can do this? And so I just downloaded, like, episodes of SpongeBob, and I just started doing the exact same thing, but for YouTube. But then eventually I started doing more stuff with, like, Dragon Ball and Beast Wars and blah, 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 and all that. And then eventually a friend of mine saw it, and he's a voice actor in Toronto, and he said, hey, man, we should meet up and, like, talk, because, like, I think you can do this professionally. I was like, people do this professionally? I didn't. And so, like, we met up, and I was like, you know what? Yeah, I'm going to try doing this. So I found an online forum, the VAA, which is now closed down, but
is it?
Yeah, it is. It's donezo. There's still the voice acting club for all of you aspirers out there. Yeah, and then eventually he helped me get an agent and a demo ready and all that, and then I got represented, and since then I started doing work with some union work, but mostly, like, non-union work for, like, video games and cartoons and corporate stuff, so.
That's what the online voice actor gets to enjoy.
Pretty much, yeah.
For me, I just saw Yu-Gi-Oh! Bridge. And you know, I wanted to do my own bridge series, so I just, for the first time ever doing voice acting, I ended up recording all the lines for episode one in one sitting. And my voice hurt so much that I had to start gargling shots of whiskey to keep my voice going, because I thought that was the proper technique you had to do.
Yeah. Salt water.
Salt and water. Again, I didn't even do a proper warm-up.
What's the warm-up?
I did Michelob, my first voice was Michelob Chariot. That was a scratchy voice like this the whole time. So, like, yeah, good stuff for the ears. I kept doing, like, a lot of, like, comedy voices for a bridge series and stuff, and then someone from the Voice Acting Alliance actually approached me to do a dub line. It was just like an actual dramatic dub. I was like, oh, okay. Kind of fell into that, and then I realized I kind of like every aspect of acting. One thing led to another. Now I've been in games, comedies, and just, I don't know, it's just been kind of crazy. I really enjoyed it.
So you said that Little Karibo really inspired the abridged genre, but you were all working on your own shows before making Dragon Ball Z Abridged. Yep. What made you choose each of your shows?
When it came to choosing my show, Yu Yu Hakusho, it kind of came down to, okay, what footage do I have access to? What shows do I enjoy? And the answers were, on DVD, I had all of Berserk and most of Yu Yu Hakusho. And at the time, our buddy Ben Creighton, HBI2K, he was doing a Berserk The Abridged series. So I'm like, well, that's off the table. Also, who the would try to make a comedy out of Berserk? So Yu Yu Hakusho is kind of the obvious answer for me on that regard.
During the time when Dragon Ball Z Abridged was happening, and the time I was still doing some YouTube stuff and like random dubs, I figured, okay, I want to sit down and actually like do a series propers. And I thought to myself, I was like, what is a good short thing that I enjoy? And this was during the time when I found JoJo in high school. And so then I found out that there was an OVA. I saw the last episode first. So already I was like, okay, but I know what it's leading up to, so there we go. And so since then I decided, you know what? Yeah, I'm gonna do this because nobody else has done it. And
this was the old
back in 1993/2001.
Wasn't even called Stardust Crusaders.
No, it was
called JoJo. Wasn't it just called JoJo's Bizarre?
It was just JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. That was the most popular one at the time. So. That's the one.
Makes
that
sense.
Did you ever find the original Phantom Blood OVA?
I
heard that's buried in a vault somewhere.
Somewhere.
The creator buried it as far deep as it could go.
Somebody does have the first 20 minutes. It's silent, but they have it for like a sound design course. So all... they managed to get the footage.
How bad does it look?
It's like... Speedwagon's not in it. That's all you need.
No Speedwagon.
No, Speedwagon is sad.
Speedwagon can't be sad because Speedwagon doesn't exist.
Was he ever?
He's not real.
I'd like to take my turn to talk about why their decisions were better than mine. I chose G Gundam Abridged because the guy I was working with really wanted to work on it, thought it could be really funny, and it's G Gundam, out of all the Gundams, is one of the silliest, also one of my favorites, just because it's...
It is the best.
They tried to go for a Street Fighter vibe for it, and it worked. I really enjoy G Gundam, and it's all, like, everyone's a stereotype.
Yeah, Neo Mexico is a floating sombrero.
I don't think it would fly nowadays.
Probably not.
Neo Egypt literally has, they have the Mecha Sphinx. It's like, it's some good high quality stuff.
Wasn't the Sweden?
They had a Windmill Gundam.
No, that was
Sailor Neo, Moon Gundam.
Sailor Moon Gundam was Neo Sweden. Yeah,
it would be. It would be a hot chick.
Yeah, no, and then she's like this fighter type, and then she starts crushing on Domo and the protagonist, who's like, ugh, ugh, because he's got like a dark past. it's great. And then there's Racer X. I mean Schwarzbruder, which means dark brother in German.
Yeah.
It turns out it's his brother. It's, oh, well, great series, great franchise. Wow. They play it off like
it's so subtle.
They play it off like it's this big reveal. I'm like, they're legit. I could tell immediately, like...
Well, that's because even back then, when it was coming out, it was a trope.
So out of every joke you guys have ever done on either your own show or on Dragon Ball, what's your favorite joke you've ever done?
The one I keep going back to... it had two things for me. it had both good writing and pacing. Well, I guess it's three things. Good writing, good pacing, and it had good visual comedy. And that was in Lord Slug when Piccolo was beating up the orange guy. Yeah. Not like from the scene where it was like, please don't break my arm. Boom! Knocking him off the roof, running back in. Off the roof again, running back in. I'm going to wait down here, catch him off guard. Hey, how's it going? Oh, nothing. I'm just waiting for that green guy. I'm going to surprise him. Neat. Yeah, he'll never see.
Oh. I remember we were watching the footage. I'm like, oh, my God, wait.
Yeah,
the
can we loop this?
No, it loops. The explosion's also in the same frame. They go back to that same frame. And they go, oh, my God, we can loop
these. That was one of my favorite jokes. And it's just like it's a perfect storm of the footage working exactly how you need it to. And just being able to do this like Bugs Bunny-esque kind of gag with it.
I'd have to say Broly's first form and how he sounded. Probably just my favorite thing. Or even Android 16 says is like my favorite.
Because he's just so serious and doesn't really understand.
You can just say you love Remix. You can just say you really just
You
love
know him. What? Yeah, yeah, there you go. Remix, he's my favorite joke.
We do love writing for him.
Yeah.
Oh my God, he's a fantastic performer. I really like the Cell Versus episodes where like, as me as an actor, that was fun as hell. That was like, oh boy, what do I got today? Cracks the knuckles.
Do you have a particular favorite Cell Versus?
It's kind of tied between two. I loved the Yu-Gi-Oh! One. Fist of the North Star.
I think is up there for me.
Remix. It's
once
like
again, remix.
We gotta go back to Remix.
I really enjoyed that one. For Helsing, though, there's been a couple jokes in Helsing that I've just been like very proud of this one. Hey, kids, want to see a dead body? Pops to the wall. There's lots of little ones, but like for FF7, everything Barrett says. Also, the raw audio of Purple Eyes recording for the doorman because it's longer than any episode. All right, okay. What is my line? Oh, sorry. Let me go in again. I'm like,
oh man, just the line. Oh man.
You could have had a blooper special just with him alone.
I really, really, we could have.
I mean, I'm going to secure funding. We're going to film a reality TV show following Purple Eyes as he's trying to fix a car.
if I could choose like a joke that is my favorite, that is like something that we did not do. His soup store scene is probably the greatest comedy scene I have ever seen.
It gets quoted. It's just a good. It was just apparently it was just based on an actual story. I'm like, that actually happened.
Which character for each of you has been your favorite to voice?
Probably Krillin. It's fun to play punch drunk. Here's the thing. Krillin really runs the gamut of emotions, like more so than any of the other characters I play. He's usually like just the most fun and the easiest on my voice to play in general.
I'd have to probably go with Barrett because he's just
your friend myself. He's very crazy. He has a lot of fun with it.
And as I was I'm realizing now that he has a few mannerisms of Samuel L. Jackson. And yeah, because
sometimes I have to talk like this in case he needs to find out what's going on.
And then Morgan Freeman whenever he needs to get serious. So.
Oh.
Yeah.
There was a time back in the day.
But no, Barrett's a lot of fun. He has a lot of crazy emotions. He's definitely a very like high energy character, but can also be very subtle at times. Not a lot of times, but you know, I enjoy him a lot. Plus, I write for him, so it helps.
Yeah, no. There you go.
Like I put Cell and Alucard in the same kind of realm because they're very similar voices. Like Cell's more projection, and Alucard's more deep in the chest.
Yeah.
As I play him, but there's this fun of playing an asshole. With Alucard, it's like he knows he can't die, and he acts like it all the time, so he takes nothing seriously. And it's kind of fully fun building up the tension just for Alucard to like on it.
It's very fun to do that.
Perfect. While I love playing Perfect Cell. First form Cell, I think, might be my favorite think play character I've ever played. It hurt. Physically, I would leave every session going.
The scene where you were, like, talking to your Cell, like, when you're talking to Nicky Town is...
What's going on, Nicky Town? You're saying, I'm Mr. Cell, you're so crazy, you should just love me. Don't worry, I'm going to get around to it. Right now, Mr. Town, just back off!
It's good, but I will say one of my favorite things to do, and especially after recording recently, Red 13.
It's good to be the day, D-A-W-G.
God is dog backwards.
It is.
Quad.
So what's your guys' process for making an abridged episode?
We sit down and, like, we watch through all the footage first. Like, yep. It's usually kind of like a riff session where we're, like, throwing out jokes as we see them coming.
Mostly laughing at the wrong things we shouldn't be laughing at.
Yeah.
That's an inside joke.
I feel like it's more on the... It's sort of an inside joke. We do make fun of it a lot on the gaming stuff whenever we're playing Dragon Ball games as well.
It's the old Gohan voice.
Yeah. We sit down, we review the episode, or the episodes that we're going to be covering, and then we just kind of start blocking out, okay, like, what are the main parts that we need to hit this episode? What are the big things that we need to get to, and what are some things that can be cut? We start making that list first, and then we...
argue.
Argue a lot.
We argue and bicker a fair amount.
And then we kind of go through and start trying to write the episode. The hardest parts are always figuring out what's going to be the first scene and what's going to be the last scene.
I think that's been from episode one to now that it's still to this day. The thing is, like,
it's because you, like, for that opening scene, you need something that's snappy and it needs to end on a bang.
It's like an essay.
Yeah,
and then the end of the episode needs to end with a. And with a good hook at the end, he wanted to make you watch the next episode. It's like pacing. That's the one thing about writing this is it's taught us pacing better than anybody. And since we're working within the constraints of what we're limited footage we are given,
the limitations of using the footage is both a blessing and a curse. Because on one hand, while it does limit us to, like, okay, what are we able to do here? It also kind of gives us structure as to, like, okay, this is what we know we need to do.
Yeah. No. There'll be big bits we want to hit. For example, I think what we do is we come up with a lot of big jokes.
Then we fill in the blanks.
Then we kind of start sewing it together, so to speak, with our, like, a design we want. And sometimes we'll strike upon a better joke while in the middle of there.
Yeah.
Like,
and since a lot of this scripting can be very disjointed, and since it takes place over multiple days, usually once we're done with a first draft, that's when we go back in, we do a couple of read-throughs, and we figure out what's making some of these scenes work and what's making some of these scenes not work, and how can we improve this to make some of these others, for example, in the last episode, we went back in and we fixed a couple of jokes specifically, there was a scene where somebody used the phrase, "Now you're speaking my language," and then we went back and there was this one thing where Goku's made, like, a sexual innuendo towards Cell, and there was just some benign line there, and I'm like, I just blurted out, "Now you're speaking my language," and it's like, oh, that makes that so much better.
Yeah, because... and they wrote that back in and immediately improved it.
Rewrites help a
lot. No, absolutely. Yes. Like, I think you can speak to, because when we scripted season one of Final Fantasy VII Mission Abridged together.
No, there was a lot of rewrites in that. I remember there was one part, because with FF7, it's video game footage, so it's a lot more limiting.
You can't just reanimate it.
Yeah, no, exactly. You have to make sure, like, this person's here, and then they go here, and here, and here, and here, and here. So it's, like, kind of playing chess, and they have to actually say something, so you need a reason for the person to either go there. One thing that we found out was there was one scene where Cloud needed to burst through
the glass
and yeah, we were just sitting there and we cut
to the actual, like, footage from the game.
Yeah, and we were like, what do we do? Like, blah, blah, blah. And then we were like, you know what, let's just sleep on it. So,
yeah,
like...
I remember we were like, let's just go to bed. Yeah. We were both kind of like, what do we do?
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, we slept down it. Still had some, like, ideas in my head that I was circling. And then I just remember sitting down and I was just, newscast. Because the footage is there, and if we already have the footage and the assets of the newscaster in the second episode, and we just, like, explain, this is how people will now know.
I thought I came up.
We probably, like, collaborated.
This is how it always happens. Like, you sit down in a group and you write something, and it's like, oh, man, that was a great idea I had. And then somebody else will be like, wait, no, I thought. Well, come on, no, it was definitely.
I had a joke with Kaiser we said in the call, and it was at your expense we made this joke.
Of course.
And we all making jokes. I'm like, so, and someone asked, like, who wrote that joke? Oh, I don't know, but I'm sure Lenny would love to take credit for it. And Kaiser spat his drink out over his screen.
You know what's funny? I came up with that.
Like, when you're in the middle of a writing room, sometimes there's big jokes you remember writing. Like, you remember some of your biggest jokes you've written. Like, for example, like the Vegeta Infinite Rage scene, I wrote that joke. That was my pitch. I'm proud as fuck of that. I can go to my grave going, oh, fuck, I wrote that scene. I did a good job. A lot of the original, like, FF7 script. Like, I kind of like, all right, here's all the pieces. Want to build a jigsaw puzzle with me, Ant?
Okay. We gotta hit the corners first.
I mean, let's we got two corners. We're fine. We're fine. We just keep built. Let's build up.
Got to separate. Got to keep the corner pieces in one.
And like for example, in Hellsing Ultimate Ridge, which I script with Kaiser, we could talk about the writing process all goddamn day. Actually,
That's a majority of our job.
It is. Like, everyone's like, so it must be great to be like a full time actor. That's not a thing. Not in our realm. Like in the end, we just voice the scripts. Why? As a means to an end.
Yeah. We make our own work.
Yeah, there you go, right? But for Hellsing, what's interesting is I pretty much I sit down and I rewatch the Hellsing episode 4 or 5 times. Then I sit down with Kaiser and I pitch my jokes to Kaiser. Kaiser's like, yeah. No. No. And then we start building an episode. This episode actually coming out, episode 8. One of the things about it, I had another writer sit in on the sessions for these. I was joined by the man, HBI Duque, who wrote Berserker Bridge and voices Alexander Anderson, wrote the Alexander Anderson episode with me. Writing is a collaborative process. Sometimes you want to just, I'm going to write the script myself. Props to those people. I would be terrified of writing my own script. And I've actually recently had to do that. And I miss my co-writers completely. I'm like, what do you think? It's just me. I hate it. Oh.
One of our most important questions that we like to ask, is a hot dog a sandwich?
Yes.
Thank you.
I mean, I'd eat it, so.
But is it a sandwich?
There's actually a graph that going around that shows, like,
you mean propaganda.
Yeah, sometimes propaganda can be truth.
That's why you got us. We're the real news.
The real news from Thunder Bay.
Honestly, guys, if you guys don't step off, I'm going to body slam you.
Didn't we already agree that's how the...
I'd say, yes.
Every interview.
You're not running for senator, Take. Just do that.
Yeah. That's
Well, welcome.
Well, you win it if you're running.
Welcome
for senator.
Welcome to the parliamentary system, Boyle. How many chairs do you have?
But regardless, it is a piece of meat between two slices of bread.
Depends. Is there pineapple on it?
That doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you fill it with. It's between two pieces of bread. It's like a sausage.
It doesn't matter what you put
What designates a sandwich? How much bread coverage is on the actual meat?
The hot dog itself is not the sandwich. It is when you put it on the bun is when it is a sandwich.
Makes sense.
Like, because you can have a corn dog is essentially a hot dog.
Are you telling me?
It's like a hot dog wrap.
By that logic,
that was a part of the.
A hamburger is a sandwich then?
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
What? No, hamburger is a fucking hamburger.
Hold on.
Have you ever gone
it
to
is
a
called
restaurant?
The original hamburger is called a hamburg steak sandwich.
Have you ever
they
been to a
shortened
restaurant
it to
and
hamburg.
Seen the menu that says hamburgers/sandwiches?
Yeah, they're two separate sections.
No, one.
Okay, I was at Fuddruckers yesterday.
Oh yes, and Fuddruckers is like
yes,
the high.
Yes, I am labeling it there. It says America's like the world's finest burgers, and then it says if you want a combo with any sandwich. It doesn't say with any burger. It says with any sandwich, and they don't serve chicken.
So last thing we want to do with you guys, we love to play the games here on Thunder Geeks. All we want is this or that. We're gonna give you one of two options.
Gotcha.
Mm.
Are you a lover or a fighter?
Lover.
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 Marvel or DC?
Marvel.
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 Star Wars or Star Trek?
Star Wars.
Star Wars.
Would you rather be eaten by a horde of gerbils or a flock of ducks?
Flock of ducks. They swallow.
I feel like I could kick off a bunch of gerbils.
I'll take the gerbils. The ducks are ducks don't have teeth. They're going to be pecking you to death.
Enjoy that. I know.
Enjoy that.
They have barbed dicks. I don't want anywhere near
you think
they said eight.
Mathematically, some of them are going to get a little bit...
very...
But I'm not a duck. I think they'll be doing that with the other ducks.
Tacos or pizza?
Ooh, that
was there we go.
Tacos.
Pizza.
Damn, if it's Texas tacos.
Taco pizzas. Have you seen those?
Texas tacos?
No, they're like
actually.
Imagine pizza, well, and then like, you just I do mean, it like yeah, this, and then you pizza. Put shit in there.
Well, I mean, there's also like taco stuff on pizza, which is also.
Well, no, but I mean, using a pizza as a taco show.
Ooh,
we're horrific. Remakes. They got pirates.
Pirates or ninjas?
Pirates.
Like, are we fighting or are we? Whatever. ninjas.
Pirates are cool.
Burned to death or frozen to death?
They're both horrible. Frozen to death because you just slowly drift off.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah,
we'll take frozen.
Star Trek holodeck or Matrix headjack?
Ouch.
Holodeck.
Holodeck. I don't want anything jacking in my head.
Star Trek Holodeck? What a silly question, good sir.
I mean, well, here's the thing. With the head jack, you can, like, you know, shink. Okay, I can pilot
then again.
Helicopter.
Yeah,
man,
then
man, when they,
like,
do
download
the,
info.
When they
do the, ooh, that would feel good.
When they do the when they do the third Bill and Ted movie, and they will do a third Bill and Ted movie, they have to. When they do it, there has to be a scene where Bill just does a bunch of, like, just a bunch of kung fu moves, and Ted's like, dude, how'd you do it? Dude, I know kung fu. Excellent.
Right. Would you rather wipe with sandpaper or poison ivy?
Oh, for the love of God.
Sandpaper.
Poison ivy.
Really?
They didn't say what ply of sandpaper. There's a consistency.
I don't think it matters.
It does. If you got 120 grit, then you're fine. But anything lower than that, it's going to be really rough.
Then I'm willing to roll that 120-sided die.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Dogs.
And our final question, who has the better booty, Peter Parker or Dick Grayson?
Dick Grayson.
That's tough. Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
I've seen that picture going around.
Oh, beautiful. Guys, thank you so much for joining us, and have yourself a great Anime North.
Thank you.
Welcome back, folks. Thank you so much for Team 4-Star. We do have some more interviews coming up from the fantastic Monica Rial and the awesome Greg Ayers. Stay tuned to 102.7 FM CILU around the world at luradio.ca, and we'll be right back.
As the COVID-19 pandemic continues to spread, it is important to stay safe. Coronavirus is now in Canadian provinces and territories. By law, if you have traveled abroad recently, you must self-isolate. To do your part, stay home as much as possible and practice social distancing. Try to maintain at least 2 meters away from others. Encourage those who are sick or showing symptoms to self-isolate or to seek medical attention. As always, wash your hands frequently, avoid touching your face, and practice good respiratory etiquette by covering your coughs and sneezes. Clean regularly used surfaces. COVID-19 symptoms can mimic colds and flu and include fever, cough, and difficulty breathing. Infected individuals may also have mild symptoms or none at all. For up-to-date information, check reliable sources like your local health authority or the Public Health Agency of Canada.
CILU is supported in part by the students of Lakehead University, our sponsors, and our listeners. At this time, we would like to thank the following sponsors for their continuous support.
Copperfin Credit Union, Northwestern Ontario's largest locally owned credit union. Experience the convenience of their mobile banking app and online financial solutions anywhere, anytime. Copperfin Credit Union, life forward. Sarah Curtin, your neighborhood realtor. She's on top of what's happening in Thunder Bay's market, and she'll help you buy or sell your home. Call or text her anytime at 632-3635 or find her online at sarahcurtin.com. The Walleye, the definitive source for information on music, food, art, and entertainment in Thunder Bay. This month's issue is on stands for free now. Find it around town or online and interactive at thewalleye.ca.
Nap, full tracks, percussion and effects, snap, and you can't look back, keep a zigzag swivel, check my bowl over my brothers from the bottom to the middle to the top, climb ice, riding bubbles till they pop, won't stop, rad razor, fast pacer, robots, and goblins and ghosts, they die by the host, California gamer from the TNC coast, post a close gaze in a Battletoads heater, most would give way for this Mike Tyson beater, Knight Simon leader, daytime castles for cowards, got you shaking your controller like the plumber shook Bowser, fire flowers for breakfast, Triforce for dinner, so toss out the Genesis, is you a winner, I never ending Contra, a master of blasters, a long distance zapper, game until my hands shatter, cartridge, jack, AV, jack, light gun, jack, start select, robot, jack, AB, jack, D-pad, jack, safe reset, cartridge, jack, AV, jack, light gun, jack, start select, robot, jack, AB, jack, D-pad, jack, safe reset, pick it up, blow it out, pop it get in, hit the power. Now's the hour for towering triumph, and I devour all the mediocre jokers, never late to the hit. I'm throwing bows, Nintendo was level 8 to the bit. Dig it, I'm natural caliber, I may be select. High scoring, I'm soaring, and I may be the best. I confess, I got advantages and skills I'm trusting daily. Thrills of busting melee, chasing Justin Bailey. Cheat codes of opposers, and I don't need none. See me gun number one, each level a speed run. I leave nothing in my wake except impressions and empty chests. Every combo a conquest, and my record of many bests. Challenge it, be damned, cause I'm the man with the mastery. I won't fake you, must break you. I admire your audacity. Well, tacitly, I respect, vocally, I destroy and shatter anyone who ever calls my NASA a toy. Cartridge, AV, light gun, start select. Duck hunting, bubble bobbling just to survive. It's my pride, my raisin dent, the very blood in my veins. Changing lanes like RC Pro, I'm Nova Code like my brain. Urban champion battling, I'm rockin' rolling, snake rattling. Gyro mighty, balloon fighting, goonies two gun like Gatling. Kung fuin', I ruin your cluing. Don't crack, don't stack, don't know what you doing.
Pick your brother, William or James, Luigi or Mario, Striker or Blade, Mega or Proto, what's in a name? Brothers of Snow, Dragons of Flame. Hall of Fame, fuck a report card, high scores that I claim. Afternoons, weekends, calluses, trains, go Nintendo hard or shut off this game.
And we're back. You're listening to Thunder Geeks, brought to you by 102.7 FM, CILU, or around the world at luradio.ca. That was Death Star with Nintendo Hard. Of course, we're away from the studio this week, so we are bringing some fantastic interviews from our past and icon guests of the now. So next up we have is Monica Rial.
Monica Rial. Oh gosh, I actually really enjoyed this interview. Mostly for the fact that Monica Rial reminds me so much of Alicia. And I really, really wish Alicia was coming with us so I could get them in the same room at the same time, and then it would cause like this Alicia Monica time paradox.
Oh, she's really right. She acts exactly like Alicia.
I hadn't realized that. Maybe that's why Greg remembers Alicia so well. Because in Greg's interview later, he actually talks about Monica Rial and how they've been friends for so long. And it wasn't until after Greg's interview I realized, oh yeah, we've interviewed Monica before.
Yeah, we have. That could exactly be why.
My favorite part of the interview is where she iterates the fact that she played Brutus in a, like, Caesar play. And I just, let's stab Caesar! Because that's actually her voice. She speaks like this, and it's just so entertaining to listen to her. I could listen to her talk for days.
I'm really excited to see her again, just because she's been doing so many more roles, and quite a few more that I've attached to. Froppy from My Hero Academia is just the best girl.
Agreed. I think it's actually the first time you and I have agreed on best girl.
Really? Wow. This is a new development.
9 times out of 10, it's Andrew usually picks, like, the ditzy small one that's a tsundere.
Cute, you mean the cute and perfect one?
So, yeah, that's where we usually fight. So, the fact that Andrew and I agree on Froppy is... That's actually a shock to me.
Isn't that pretty much Froppy?
No,
Froppy being, like, the cute little girl.
But she's not mean.
No. She's wholesome, but she's not super cutie. I don't think they have a super cutie character unless we count...
Gravity Girl.
Uraraka.
She's Girl Next Door. She is Girl Next Door. You have Girl Next Door. The sexy one that makes things from her boobs. I forget what her name is. I forget Momo. Thank you. I forget most of the characters' names.
Me too.
The closest one to cutie is the tummy laser boy that I like. Again, I need to look up character names. They have all left my head because season 4 is not here yet. I will remember character names during the season. After that, it's by their power.
I think it's Deku. Deku's definitely like the weird cutesy one.
I mean, do you remember all the scenes where he's talking to Uraraka on the phone and he's just like, oh, I'm talking to a girl?
You know, you might not be wrong. I think Deku is, in fact, best girl.
Yes.
She does get to play, like, the cutesy girl, though, Monica, because she gets to actually take the mantle as Sakura in the new Cardcaptors.
Yeah, the Clear Card Saga. Yeah.
So now she gets to be another cutesy girl, and I can't wait to see her again. Yes! I'm wondering what color her hair is going to be this time, because in all of her photos, she has different colored hair, and when we met her, it was like this really plum purple color. So I'm like, ooh, I wonder what color it's going to be this time.
Well, folks, we're going to head to our interview, and here's Monica Rial.
Welcome, Monica. How's it going?
Pretty good.
Good, good. So, I guess first things first, how did you get into the voice acting?
I got into voice acting by a fluke. Totally unexpected. I was an actor in Houston, Texas, and I was going to the University of Houston. And funny bit of trivia, I went to college with Jim Parsons, who plays Sheldon on The Big Bang Theory. So it's kind of funny because it's like this weird circle of Jim and Jason Douglas, who plays Tobin on Walking Dead, and Lord Beerus, and we all went to college together. It was very strange. But while I was there, Jason and I were doing, I think it was Cymbeline, it's a Shakespeare show, and he was like, hey, I'm doing this thing in Houston for animation, and you should totally do it. And at first he said cartoons, and I was like, oh, okay, sweet. I didn't know that we did that in Houston. I thought that was all L.A. And he showed me his keychain, and it was like Marin from Sorcerer Hunters or one of the little people from Sorcerer Hunters. I'm like, oh, it's not just cartoons, it's anime. Like, my brother's a huge anime fan. This would be really cool. So I auditioned, and it was kind of like the planets aligned properly or something, because I called on like a Wednesday and they were having auditions that weekend. And so I went and auditioned. They waited like 3 or 4 months and called me in for Walla. And then I got a lead, and then it just kind of kept going. And I kept joking. I'm like, okay, eventually they'll get tired of me. And it didn't. So yeah, it was kind of a fluke. I kind of stumbled into it thanks to Jason Douglas.
Awesome.
He kind of pulled me in, I guess.
He's like a mentor.
Yeah, exactly. And I credit him with that all of the time. And he's just like, oh, psh. I'm like, no, seriously, I wouldn't be doing this if it weren't for Lord Beerus, as weird as that.
Do you yourself have any like little young Padawans?
Yes, something? Tia Ballard. Tia Ballard came in and auditioned for me for Nobari No-O. She'd never done any anime or voice acting before. Dave Trosko, who's another director at Funimation, at the time he was just a voice actor, and he sent her in. And so it was the end of the day, and I'm like, oh, fine, okay, come in, person I've never seen before. And she came in and she did a really good job, and was like, okay, well, let me put up some flaps and let's see if you can match. And she was not too bad at it. But the only role I had was for like a lead girl, and I wasn't quite ready to take somebody off the street and be like, here's the lead. So I told everybody at Funimation, I'm like, hey, this girl's really good. You should bring her in for Wall and stuff so I can use her later on. And they were all like, she's in your voice range. Why would you do that? And I'm like, because I'm not an
Yeah. Like, I want to give people a shot too.
There's plenty of work to go around, and and so she says that all the time. She's like, "Good work, Monica." So it's nice to kind of pass it along. So now Tia has to find somebody to do the same.
Okay. We know that you've been many, many roles. You said close to 500 throughout the day. What roles do you think are most challenging for you? Like,
definitely the grown-ups.
The grown-ups.
Like whenever I use my big girl voice, as I like to call it, those are more challenging only because this is my natural voice. So this is like default.
Pushing in like way down in here. You couldn't even hear it cracking because I didn't warm up this morning.
But normally like I'll warm up, but it takes a lot of breath support to keep it down there. And a lot of times, like, you know, I'm thinking about Umi Heavy and Snow White with the red hair. Like, she's a pirate queen, so everything is yelled. So it takes a lot of breath support to just talk like that. And then to yell like that is like, it's really, really hard. Michiko and Hachin, there were many, many times where I felt like I was going to pass out. Bulma, too, because she's even, though she's not incredibly low, she's still lower than my natural voice and takes kind of a fullness to her. Like, she's got more of a, I don't even know how to describe it. Yeah,
more it just takes up more space.
Takes a lot more space. So she takes a lot of breath support, too. So those are the most difficult, I would say.
A lot of people don't really realize how much, like, core strength that actually takes.
Yes. That's why I get a lot of voice, like, people who want to be voice actors, and they're like, what can I study other than acting?
Breathing?
Breathing. And I tell them singing a lot of times, because it teaches you to breathe from your diaphragm and, you know, how to breathe full of air and get all the air out. And
It also helps with reads, because a lot of times people come in and everything sounds really flat because they're like, I'm on a microphone and this is what I do on stage, and you'd be able to take the visual cues.
I am a robot.
Exactly. So with the music classes and singing classes, they get that musicality to their voice.
You said you were in theater before, mm-hmm. and you said you're Shakespeare?
Shakespeare and musical theater were my two big
yeah. things. Well, like, what was your favorite production that you were in?
Oh gosh, I was in an all-female version of Julius Caesar, and I played Brutus, which was pretty awesome. Of course, I used this voice, and not this voice, because that would have been that would have been pretty awesome, though.
Just yeah. I look at my muscles.
Right.
But...
Hail Caesar! But yeah, that was one of my favorites. I also did, I've done Taming of the Shrew like 3 times, but I always play Bianca, which makes me upset. I really want to play Kate someday. I did a production of Cymbeline with Jason Douglas. That was a lot of fun, playing Imogen. So yeah, I've done a lot of Shakespeare, a lot of musical theater, because they always tell you that if you're an actor on stage, those are the two places where you make the most money. So I was like, sweet, I'm going to be really good at those two things. So that's all I did for a long time, and then anime found me and took me away.
Just kidnapped you. Just put the burlap sack over your head.
Put me in the trunk, and here I am now.
So I imagine through your career, you've been to many conventions and things like that.
Yeah.
How do you think it's impacted the life of voice actors, like when you go to conventions, like seeing the faces of the fans and actually being able to connect with them?
It's so cool. Like, you know, somebody asked yesterday if I consider the conventions part of my job. And while yes, it is a part of the job, because it is kind of like I'm promoting all of the things that I'm in, and I'm going out and telling you about all the new services and subscribe to Funimation and blah, 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 which is all great. But it also is about connecting with the people who watch the shows. I get, like, there's heart-wrenching stories that people come up and are like, this is how this show has touched my life, or this is how this show. Yesterday, there's a wonderful young man named Callum who's in the process of recovery, and his mom was like, I don't think you understand how much this, you know, what you've done has affected him and helped him recover. And I'm like, tears. You know, I had one guy tell me once that, you know, his mother was dying in the hospital and she wanted to spend some time with him, and they watched anime together, and he's like, I just wanted to thank you for making my mom laugh before she passed. And I'm like, oh my God. So it's the stories like that, though, where you go, hey, maybe what I'm doing is more than just being an actor and being an anime. Maybe I am actually touching lives. And how can I do that and be the best person that I can be and spread optimism and happiness and hopefully touch people's lives in that way, so that they in turn go out and spread more optimism and happiness? So yeah, I've kind of taken it as, well, it is part of the job. It's also very therapeutic for me, because it's like, hey, I get to go out there and meet people, show them that not all actors are jerks. You know, a lot of us are really humble and down to earth and cool. And also, you know, talk to people and get feedback, because we don't ever, you know, we go and record and then it's sent out into the ether. Mm. We sometimes forget that, oh yeah, people watch this and they love it and they care about it. So it's nice to hear that from people when they come up and they're like, hey, really enjoy what you do. And it's a huge deal for us, because it kind of keeps us motivated.
I know the feeling, myself being one of those people. Like, I lived through Dragon Ball for like my entire life, and I still watch Super, like, as soon as the episodes come out, like all of that, and I've huge impact.
And you don't think about it when you're in the middle of it, and then, you know, all of a sudden it's like people come up, I'm like, holy crap, we really did make a difference. Mm-hmm. Or people grew up with us, listening to us. Like, even Jason Douglas's daughter, she's like, you were the voice of Hello Kitty and Hello Kitty's Animation Theater. I'm like, yeah. And she's like, I grew up listening to you all the time. Oh my gosh, I love you. And I was like, thanks. That's so cute. So you never know who you're gonna touch and whose lives you're gonna touch. So it's really special. I love coming to the conventions and meeting folks for that.
You've also been an ADR scriptwriter.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the challenges you have in adapting the anime?
Japanese humor.
Some of the little...
Oh, gosh. Well, they're really big on puns, but the problem is that their puns don't translate, because Japanese and English are like apples and oranges. Mm-hmm. So usually they'll be like, hey, I say this word in Japanese. Oh, that's funny. I'm going to say this word because it sounds like that word, and there's going to be a miscommunication, and there's a giant pink elephant on the screen, which is funny in Japanese, and everybody goes, ha, 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 ha. And then I look at it and go, ripe and, you know, electricity. Those don't sound anything alike. Nor is there any reason for a pink elephant. So then it's my job to go, okay, I have to make something funny. Try to make it wordplay if I can, so it's the same kind of idea. Incorporate the pink elephant and make it funny enough that all the characters going, have a reason to actually laugh. So that's probably the hardest part. There are sometimes when the Japanese humor just doesn't translate. I'm working on a show called Love Tyrant right now, which I absolutely love. But there's a part where one of the characters shows up in a shrimp costume. And she's like, and in Japanese, I can't even remember what the pun was, but it was something very obscure and very strange. I'm like, nobody's going to get that. Nobody's going to understand that at all. What can I do? What can I do? It has to be funny. It has to be a pun. So I had her come in and go, it's hard out there for a shrimp. And I thought, I gave plenty of alternate lines just in case. I was like, here are your other alternates just in case you hate this one. But they went with that one. And I've gotten several people on Twitter that are like, oh my God, that was hilarious. I'm like, oh, thank God. Oh, good. Because it's like, you can spend, now we only get 2 days to turn around a script, which is unbelievably fast. It used to be that you could spend a lot of time ruminating and figuring out things like on Fairy Tale. I had all the time in the world to go, okay, how am I going to make this work? Because it just doesn't work. Now, there really isn't a lot of time. Luckily, Love Tyrant has the manga and it follows pretty closely. So I can go back and forth between the two and kind of connect the dots if necessary. Definitely the humor is probably the hardest thing. Any kind of wordplay. The drama series tend to be a lot easier. The one thing is also knowing the language enough to understand how it's different intricacies. Because sometimes you get a really great translator where you don't have to do really anything other than just make sure it fits the flaps. They'll leave you notes about what everything means. And then sometimes you get that translator that maybe you just started. And you'll notice that all the ends of the sentences are at the beginning, like all the sentences are flipped because that's how they do in Japanese. And things just won't quite make sense. And so that's when it gets really difficult too.
Yeah, because I feel like the comedy in Panting Stocking was very like, there's a pink elephant in the room. So like, I can imagine that you ran into some kind of like,
wall-like. Yeah, Jamie Markey, who plays Panty, did the adaptions for those. And it was pretty awesome because Gainax came to Funimation, they were like, look, we get it. We understand that your humor is totally different than our humor. We don't want you to do just a straight translation of what we did. We want you to keep the story and everything, but please make it funny. I think they told her, like, make it as funny as possible or as raunchy as possible within the realms of U.S. law. So she's like, sweet, I could do that. So, and she thought about things like, you know, like the F word. The F word in Japan is a big deal because it's kind of foreign and it's like punchy, punchy. Well, here you watch HBO for 5 minutes and you'll hear it 10 times. So she had to find other ways to make it more. We still said it a lot, but she had to come up with other words. Words to make it even more punchy and more abrupt and in your face. I think she did a brilliant job. And I apparently they did too, because that's the first time that we've ever been on a Japanese Blu-ray. They put our dub on their Japanese Blu-ray release, which I thought that was so cool. I'm in Japanese people's living room. And it's fun because every once in a while I'll get a very obviously like Google translated email from somebody who's like Panty Stocking. Nice job. And I'm like, okay, thank you. I don't even know how to reply to you. Thanks.
It's always good to get some sort of feedback that's positive.
The worst part is I got an email from one gentleman in Japan who was fantastic, but he was using Panty and Stocking to learn English.
Great choice to learn.
I could just imagine him going around town being like, hey, shit pickle, yay! I'm like, no. No, probably not a good choice.
Is a hot dog a sandwich?
Oh my God.
These are the hard questions.
I've never even contemplated whether a hot dog is a sandwich.
It's a thought that not too many people have come across.
Right? Because, okay, here's how I would go with it. My brain, just to give you an insight on where my brain goes, at first I'm like, okay, it's not a sandwich because the bread is attached. But then if you think about it, like po' boys in New Orleans, the bread is attached. So then does that make that a sandwich? Or is that a po' boy? I'm going to say no.
Oh.
It's a hot dog.
It's a hot dog. It's like its own separate
It's its own
genre.
Thing. Yeah.
Thank you.
I think. I'm not sure, but I'm going to go with that.
It's an argument within us, too, and I'm strongly against it being a sandwich. It's a hot dog.
Oh, because otherwise they'd be like, hey, hot dog sandwich, right?
I'm not really sure.
Another thing we like to do too is we go this or that questions. Like we give you two options and just pick one.
Ooh, this
and
is
like
fun.
Rapid fire
Sweet.
Question kind
okay.
of thing.
Yeah.
So first things first, are you a lover or a fighter?
I'm a lover.
Lover? Marvel or DC?
Oh, I suck at this.
She's a Libra, man.
We're
She's
a Iron Man.
Iron Man.
Only because of Robert Downey Jr. I love him.
True. Star Wars or Star Trek?
Oh, Star Wars.
Awesome. And would you rather be eaten by a horde of gerbils or a flock of ducks?
Ooh, gerbils. At least they have teeth. It would hurt them faster.
We had a question before where someone was like, do ducks have teeth? Or would they just sit there like
they would just slap
you for a while?
Forever. Can you imagine?
Tacos or pizza?
Oh, that's a hard one. I'm going to go with pizza.
Pirates or ninjas?
Oh, ninjas. I hate pirates. I have a weird thing about pirates, you guys. I can't even go see Pirates of the Caribbean.
Really?
It's really?
Very strange. It's not like J. Michael Tatum and clowns, but I have my own weird... I was probably like drowned in a past life
oh,
or walked
no.
a plank or something, but I don't like pirates. It's weird.
That's fair. That's fair.
One Piece is fine. I just... No pirates.
Burned to death or frozen?
Ooh. Frozen? Like, is it past freeze?
It could be, like, carbonite. Like,
yeah, if it's a past freeze, then great.
Dip like
I
Luke.
Still think that would be... I think your system would shut down... This is me and my brain. I think your system would shut down faster with a cold. Because the fire, you're gonna... I mean, I guess you feel it either way, but how?
Most people kind of relate it to just kind of peacefully going, but cold.
Right? Yeah.
But cold. Pancakes or waffles?
Belgian waffles.
Ooh.
Wait, Belgian waffles?
Like the big, neffy ones?
Yeah.
Star Trek holodeck or Matrix headjack?
I don't even know what those mean.
Oh, no. Okay, so...
Star Trek holodeck.
A virtual reality that you can walk around or an internal virtual reality that's in your head?
Ooh, no, I'd rather walk around.
All right, there you go.
I don't want it in my head.
So would you rather wipe with sandpaper or poison ivy?
Sandpaper.
Cats or dogs?
Oh.
These are the hard ones.
I'm going to go with cats because I have a cat named Michael Jackson.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And our most talked about question that we usually have, who has the better booty? Nightwing, or Dick Grayson, or Peter Parker, Spider-Man?
Which Peter Parker?
Oh, that's
like, are we talking
question.
Like movie Peter Parkers?
Let's go Tom Holland because he's the current guy.
Is he the young guy?
Yes.
And who plays the other?
I don't think Nightwing's
had He's not had a... Okay, well then I'm going to go... No offense, Peter Parker. I'm going to go with Nightwing because that guy's young and I feel weird.
Did you see his lip sync battle?
No, I haven't watched that show in forever. That looks like so much fun.
It's amazing.
Agree. I love the show completely.
I want to do that. I'll have to check it out.
So I think that's everything from us.
I believe so.
Awesome. Well, thank you. I thought that was super fun.
Thank you very much.
Glad.
I like it. You guys have great questions. Thank you.
And we're back. Thank you again to Monica Riel. She was so much fun to talk to. And again, we are so excited to see her again at Icon, and we will let you know next week. Coming up, we of course have our interview with Greg Ayers. But folks, thank you so much for tuning in. We're your Thunder Geeks, and this is brought to you by 102.7 FM CILU around the world at luradio.ca. We'll be right back.
hit in America.
I was made to 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 hit in America.
CILU is sponsored in part by the students of Lakehead University, our listeners, and our sponsors. At this time, we would like to thank the following sponsors for their continuous support.
The Foundry at 242 Red River Road, open 11 a.m. to 2 a.m. Monday to Saturday, featuring folk and Mondays, karaoke Tuesdays, trivia Wednesdays, open stage Thursdays, and live music weekends. Find out more at thefoundrypub.com. The Thunder Bay Symphony Orchestra. Log on to tbso.ca or call 626-TBSO for details on the 2019-2020 season and how to get tickets. The Lakehead University Student Union, promoting action, advocacy, and service by bringing you student centers. Learn more by visiting their office in the tunnels of the student center or by logging on to lusu.ca.
And we're back. You're listening to Thunder Geeks, brought to you by 102.7 FM CILU, or around the world at luradio.ca. That was the Beat Crusaders with Hitting the USA from the anime series Beck. That was the first role that I ever got to experience Greg Ayers in, and I think the first anime marathon I ever saw on TV. Like, I was flipping through the channels, and then on Much Music, this weird show called Beck came up. I didn't even know it was only an episode 2. I just lucked out into tuning into around the beginning, and I sat and watched it for the rest of the day.
Finding anime on TV for me was really difficult because I didn't have YTV or Teletoon, and the fact that it was suddenly on Much Music all the time, I was so excited, and I was just like, oh my gosh, an anime, finally. And I binge-watched it, and it became one of my favorites. I showed it to all my friends after I bought the DVD, like, collection, and I have it still. So that was probably my first exposure to him as well.
A cool thing about Beck as well, it's a bittersweet. They did record an entire album of music, and Ayers has a copy. He used to play it for people at Icon until someone snuck a recorder in and, like, recorded it and kind of bootlegged an awful quality to the end. And Greg's also, like, he's really passionate about bootlegs. He's the one that got Alicia so, you know, fired up about, you know, merch in the dealer's room possibly being filled with asbestos. Only buy official plushies, folks.
Asbestos? No.
Just a casual asbestos.
I'm not going to lie. Like, halfway through that Greg Ayers interview, I wanted to scream, oh, you're Lord Frost! Because it just, like, I knew I recognized his voice from something recent. I'm just thinking. And in the back of my mind, I screamed that. Like, if you were looking at me at that point, I just went bug-eyed staring at him.
Yeah, I love that he enjoys getting that role so much since his brother is Frieza. So it works so well.
He's also Gildo from way back when.
I didn't know Gildo. He was.
Yeah, from the original
Dragon Time Waltz. Freeze.
Dang. With his little, like, psycho javelins.
Who wants a dog biscuit?
The kind of dog I want is the Ayers dog. Unfortunately, we're missing some key ingredients. He goes through this entire specific recipe about the perfect Greg Ayers hot dog. The problem is the brands of hot dogs he names off, and yes, he goes into hot dog brand specificity. We don't have here, so we need to have a heist where we smuggle some wieners over the American border.
I'm not even going to go there, but I will say one quick thing. We didn't actually say this because it was post-interview. He recommended a hot dog place for us, and we had the Slum Dog.
I know. It is in the interview. We got the directions.
Yeah.
his hot dog recommendation. Guys, if you're ever in Winnipeg, check out this place. I hope they still have the Slum Dog. It was beautiful. But we're going to let Greg Ayers tell you more about that, guys. We'll be right back. And we're back. You're listening to Thunder Geeks, brought to you by 102.7 FM CILU, or around the world at luradio.ca. That was the Beat Crusaders with Hit in the USA. And Beck with I've Got a Feeling. Of course, that was the first role that I ever got to experience Greg Ayers in. And I think the first anime marathon I ever saw on TV, like, I was flipping through the channels, and then on Much Music, this weird show called Beck came up. I didn't even know it was only an episode 2. I just lucked out into tuning into around the beginning, and I sat and watched it for the rest of the day.
Finding anime on TV for me was really difficult because I didn't have YTV or Teletoon. And the fact that it was suddenly on Much Music all the time, I was so excited. And I was just like, oh my gosh, an anime, finally. And I binge watched it and it became one of my favorites. I showed it to all my friends after I bought the DVD like collection, and I have it still. So that was probably my first exposure to him as well.
A cool thing about Beck as well, it's a bittersweet. They did record an entire album of music, and Ayers has a copy. He used to play it for people at Icon until someone snuck a recorder in and like recorded it and kind of bootlegged an awful quality to the end. And Greg's also like, he's really passionate about bootlegs. He's the one that got Alicia so, you know, fired up about, you know, merch in the dealer's room possibly being filled with asbestos. Only buy official plushies, folks.
Asbestos? No.
Just a casual asbestos.
I'm not going to lie. Like, halfway through that Greg Ayers interview, I wanted to scream, oh, you're Lord Frost! Because it just, like, I knew I recognized his voice from something recent. I'm just thinking. And in the back of my mind, I screamed that. Like, if you were looking at me at that point, I just went bug-eyed staring at him.
Yeah, I love that he enjoys getting that role so much, since his brother is Frieza, so it works so well.
He was also Gildo, from way back when.
I didn't know Gildo. He was...
Yeah, from the original Dragon Ball.
Time Freeze.
Yeah.
Dang.
With his little, like, psycho javelins.
Who wants a dog biscuit?
The kind of dog I want is the Ayers dog. Unfortunately, we're missing some key ingredients. He goes through this entire specific recipe about the perfect Greg Ayers hot dog. The problem is the brands of hot dogs he names off, and yes, he goes into hot dog brand specificity, we don't have here, so we need to have a heist where we smuggle some wieners over the American border.
I'm not even going to go there, but I will say one quick thing. We didn't actually say this because it was post-interview. He recommended a hot dog place for us, and we had the Slum Dog.
I know, it is in the interview. We got the directions.
Yeah.
His hot dog recommendation, guys, if you're ever in Winnipeg, check out this place. I hope they still have the Slum Dog. It was beautiful. But we're going to let Greg Ayers tell you more about that, guys. We'll be right back. Hello, so we're your Thunder Geeks live at Icon, and we are here with the wonderful Greg Ayers.
Hello.
Tell our listeners who aren't familiar with you just a little about yourself.
I'm a very old guy that sounds like a little kid. I mainly make a living playing young pointy-haired boys in Japanese animated TV series. I guess I could throw out some roles. I'm one of the two twins in Oran High School Host Club. I'm Negi Springfield in Negima, Chrono and Chrono Crusade. I guess for listeners in Canada, I'm Koyuki in Beck, which... I was super excited that Beck was premiered in Canada before it was even played in the States, the dub was. And now, most recently, I am one of the newest villains in the Dragon Ball universe, Frost. But yeah, and it's kind of cool because my brother is the voice of Frieza, so it's kind of funny to play the little bluer version of my brother's character.
Now, I believe you said in your panel you started in musical theater.
Yep.
How did that come about?
Actually, like everything in my life, that was even an accident. like I talk about, you know, getting into voice acting, it was an accident. I was in gymnastics. I was on a junior Olympic team, actually. I was super hyperactive as a kid. And my brother is one of those kids that came out of the womb with a top hat and a cane. Like, he was just always going to be a performer. He's been on Broadway twice. And, I mean, he's known since he was a baby that he wanted to be a performer. I was in the parking lot when he was auditioning for The King and I. And he was just auditioning to be one of the king's children. And I was just doing like cartwheels and handsprings and aerials in the parking lot. I was just like running around and flipping in the parking lot. And apparently the director came up to my mom and dad and were like, hey, when is he coming in to audition? And my mom said, oh no, our other son's an actor. That's Chris Ayers. He's already seen you. And he goes, yeah, but what is he doing? And my mom goes, that's just what he does. He flips around a lot. And so like, well, we could use somebody with acrobatic skills. So literally my first audition was just doing flips. Just came in and did flips for a bunch of casting people, and that was it. But then once I did it, you know, it's cool to be 7 years old and be dressed up as like a little Siamese kid and put on a fancy costume and then still get to do what I normally do, which is run around and flip, you know, flip-flop on everything. So then I just kind of haphazardly fell backwards into theater, and I enjoyed it, and I found out I had a really good singing voice, and so then I got to do lots of like super... I also found out I have a very strange male voice. Like as I got older, I'm a countertenor, which is a high tenor that also sings in a woman's operatic range. So then I got to do, just like in anime, I got to do a lot of weird singing roles because I have this trick voice. So yeah, that's how I started. And then I know Monica Rial and Chris Patton from theater. Chris Patton used to come to the nightclub I used to work at, but I knew Monica from theater. We were all doing a play together called Runaways. And right soon after that is when ADV Films was casting Spriggan. And they needed someone to sound like a 10-year-old boy. And Monica was like, oh my God, call my friend. He works at a law firm. He sounds like he's 12 years old. And so my audition was just my voicemail at work. They just called one night at like 2 in the morning and just listened to my voicemail. But that's kind of how I haphazardly fell into the industry even. So yeah, accident. Happy, to quote Bob Ross, a happy accident. Yeah.
What was your most challenging role?
Neggy Springfield. Man, look, no hesitation there. Neggy Springfield in the show Negima. British accent part was super easy. I grew up watching British television. I still have a special cable package where I have 35 channels of British television. Addicted to British game shows and cooking shows and all that. So like the accent was great. I love studying regional accents, but he's a 9-year-old boy who is terrified of all the women he's surrounded by. And so when we originally started the role, and I don't know if I'm gonna even, I probably can't do the highest version of the voice, but when we started the role, his voice more sounded just whispery and childlike. It was like, hello everyone, my name is Neggy Springfield. I am your new teacher. Like very simple. Well, so they took that and pitched it up two semitones. And so when I asked for a ref disc, which is a disc, because we recorded the first episode and then they waited and then they did stuff and then we came back and recorded the rest. The ref disc they gave me was pitched up, and no one told me that. So that's what I was rehearsing with. So when I went in, it was this squeaky voice, and that was fine until I had to start screaming in Latin. And I'm like, whoa. It's like, here's the highest part of my voice. Like, I have no ceiling now. You've, like, got me right at the ceiling of my voice. So yeah, like I've always made the joke, like I hope I get to go back and do an episode of Neggy's, you know, Negima where he hits puberty and his voice changes, because I love the character. I love Ken Akamatsu and I love the show. I just hate that voice and it really hurts. And the only thing to come a second close was in Gantz, I play a 16-year-old serial killer, and at some point he gets set on fire and he screams for almost 2 minutes straight.
Ooh.
And like, it's one of those things actors love to say, like, oh, well, you know, you have to protect your voice. There's a special way to scream. There is no guarded way of screaming that sounds like you're on fire. Like, there's only one way to be on fire, and that is scream your bloody lungs out. What I always shoot for is, like, believability, and, like, I wanted it to sound like it was on fire. The other problem is we had a director who was a perfectionist, so I did it about 15 times. And, like, Tiffany Grant was in that session. She was actually waiting. She was the next session. And she would be like, please don't make him do that again. And every time I would scream, she would go, ah, and just hold her throat. Like, she would put her hand over her throat because she said it was hurting just listening to it. The work is fun. It's the challenges of pushing your vocal cords. It's like being an athlete, only I only have this muscle here, you know, just my throat to worry about.
What's your favorite thing to wear on the job? So what do you like to wear on your voice acting?
Man, I love to take my shoes off at work. That's my favorite thing. That's what I like to not wear. The booths at Funimation, the whisper booths, are like padded. So, man, you take your shoes off and it's like you're in a big, like, slipper. Like, it's like standing in a big slipper. I mean, the best thing about my job, I used to work in a law firm where I had to be dressed in a suit every day. And now, I wear whatever I want to work. If I feel like looking scummy, you know, I can just show up in an old band shirt and ripped up jeans. Or if I want to impress somebody with some new clothes, you know, like there's no limit to what I can or can't wear. I learned that you don't wear your pajamas to work, though, because I did that 1 year. And the day that I decided it would be a cute idea to wear my pajamas to work was the day they brought the Japanese in. And so there I stood in my pajamas, and they're like, wait, I guess you can't see that over the microphone. Wait a minute. I'm like, oh, God. And then worse is they took a picture of me that day because they're like, oh, we'll get a picture of, you know, Yoshimatsu-san. And that's the picture they blew up and put on my booth at AX. So there's this picture of me looking very tired going, and that was the picture they blew up. So I think you should never. And then one time I was at a con and I thought it'd be funny because they put me on a 10 o'clock panel. And I thought it'd be funny to show up in my pajamas. I didn't shower even. I just went straight in my pajamas to look like I woke up in the room. I got there early and laid across the table. So when they got there, I was asleep on the table. And the hotel caught on fire. And I was stuck.
Oh, jeez.
I was stuck. I couldn't get back to my room. And I was stuck, filthy, unwashed, unteeth brushed, in my pajamas until like 4 o'clock that afternoon. I was like, man, what is it with me and my pajamas? So like, don't ever wear your pajamas to work, ever.
Now, you've become a bit famous for your colorful hair.
Yeah.
What was your favorite hair color you've done or hairstyle?
I don't know. Like, it's so weird. I mean, I love my leopard skin mohawk. I had a red mohawk that had leopard spotted sides, and I like that. My favorite hairdo is the one I didn't get to do. And now, because of, like, cultural standards, I think it probably is impossible. Back once upon a time when, you know, white people could get a braid or a weave and nobody would say anything, I really had this idea of getting reflective silver extensions in, like, a braided, like, braided
like
hairdo.
Dreadlock.
Reflective silver dreads and wear all white so I look like the creepy twins in The Matrix. But, like, I would have foiled the plan myself because I'm a grubby little kid. Like, you could wash me and put me in the middle of a bed and I would have dirty fingernails in, like, 10 minutes. So, like, I think the all white outfit was probably a bad idea from the jump. But I always wanted to do that with my hair. Right now, I'm rocking this weird calico blonde. One of my friends is like, you should dye your hair gray. And I'm like, man, I got gray. I got real gray. And then I bleached my hair and the gray kind of comes into it in a cool way. So I'm like enjoying like a more natural weird hair right now. But I'm thinking about doing something else to my hair pretty soon, but I'm waiting. I'm saving it. Kind of all got messed up for me because I saw a girl with purple hair in a Trump shirt and I was like, nope, that's it.
Nope.
That's it. This purple hair is over. So, but there's a bunch of colors that I haven't done yet. Like I haven't done indigo. Indigo is my favorite color, but I haven't found a good hair dye that's that color. And that's the issue with hair is like, it's sometimes what the box looks like is not the color you end up with on your head. Because I once tried to dye like a really beautiful deep forest green and it came out like lawn green, like grass green. And I was like, wow, I look like a Christmas tree. Like, so, but yeah, so I'll wait. I don't know. We'll see what my next do happens.
Now, of course, we got to see how hype of a DJ you are.
Oh my gosh.
How did you get into like the DJ career?
So I've been doing that almost as long, maybe longer than I've been playing, than I've been acting. I've been playing music for 32 years now. So I've been playing music. Maybe I suck at math. I started when I was 16. So there we go. And I'm going to be 50 this year. Yes. Dun, dun, dun. I used to go to these things called teen clubs. And I was that annoying kid that hung around the DJ booth. Like, what's that song? What is that? How do you put the needle on? Blah, blah, blah. And like, I would just ask all these questions. And one night the DJ got sick. And it's my friend Robert Gutierrez. And he called my house and he goes, hey, dude, I had pneumonia. Can you go up to the club and DJ tonight? And I was like, I don't know how to DJ. He goes, man, you know as much as I do. He goes, you watch me do it every night. And I'm like, seriously, dude, I don't know how to DJ. And he said the magic words, because I used to love watching him thumb through all of his records. And he goes, look, this is probably the only chance you'll ever get to dig through my records. And I was like, yeah, tell your dad I'll be there. Like, so like my whole jumping into that way, again, accidental, was because I wanted to dig through my friend's records. It's funny because I started DJing at a time that like DJs did more, like they were more like iPods. You just played song after song after song. And so I've grown up in an age where the DJ has kind of turned into this other thing. Music's like, if you've ever seen me DJ, it's real obvious. Music is like probably one of the most important things in my life. It just never stopped. Once I started doing that, once I there's something cool about, like, it's similar to being an actor, but like picking a song and watching the whole mood of the room rise up, and like, you know, when it looks like they can't take anymore, bringing the tempo back down and playing a few slows, like, it's just like orchestrating a room full of people. It's super cool. And a lot of what I do as an actor seems very self-congratulatory. I'm a pretty shy person, so like talking about what I do all day, every day, seems a little weird. But to me, like, at the end of a rave, I've earned the you know, the noise, because I've like worked my butt off and I've watched everybody have a good time, and so it's just fun. But I can't imagine a time in my life that I won't be playing music somewhere, even at an old folks home.
What's your process when you create a track or a set?
Well, see, I don't produce any music right now, but the guy that I work with in the States, which his name is Tim, but he operates under, produces under the name Love Letters from Amsterdam. If you heard that sick remix of Simple and Clean, that's his. He also did the My Hero Academia remix. A lot of the anime stuff is his that I played. It's weird because a lot of people have tried to get me to produce, but I just don't have the time between conventions and now with two family members sick, like home stuff and work. Like, I just, the idea of sitting down and spending 40 hours on a song, I'm like, nah. As far as what I do when I produce a mix, I try to pick a mood and then just kind of flow out from there. And I used to never plan mixes, but now people want them, so I want them to have a solid start and finish. But I'm never set in stone. Like, I don't, people will ask me, can I get a copy of your playlist? And I was like, well, I don't have a playlist, just so much of what I do is based on what I see in the audience. And like, if I see people like are getting tired, that's why I played Moonbaton last night, which is super slow. There were people that were just worn out, and I was like, okay, let's take it to a halftime so everybody can like catch their breath, you know, and then recharge for the end of the show. I guess the only way to prepare for a show is just to keep that line of communication with the audience.
The audience is an instrument themselves.
And I always have a folder of, it's like called new bangers or new crap or whatever. And it's like brand new stuff that I've just bought. But it's funny to me how many times none of those new songs work themselves in. There were a few of them last night that were brand new songs that I played. Tear the Roof Off This Place is one of them. Sometimes the audience dictates what you play, and that's, I guess, what makes me different from a lot of the DJs that I work with. I take a lot of flack for playing DDR songs. So like, oh, you play Sandstorm. I'm like, I play for nerds. Of course I play Sandstorm. It's one of the biggest tracks in DDR. Like I've always said, I'm never smarter than the audience I play for. And they're not dumb. They know what they want to hear. It might not be my stuff. Like, if it was me, we'd listen to nothing but 174 BPM drum bass all night long. But like, not many people can hang with that all night long. So like, I get a little bit of drum and bass in there, but like, I play what I think the audience wants to hear. And I had somebody who was like, that's pandering. I'm like, no, that's being successful, because they want you back if you play what they want to hear. So yeah.
Now, I always love your appreciation for Canada.
Oh man.
What is your favorite Canadianism?
Oh man! Oh god! That's like asking me which of my children is my favorite. I hate saying it right now because there's such a weird strain and relationship between my stupid president and trade and all that.
We're like, conquering and down and just
yeah,
waiting it out
yeah,
right
I
now.
Know. It's like a being in a hurricane. That's the way we feel. Like, oh, this won't last forever. But I hate to play into a stereotype, but like, I came to Canada when I was 16 years old. I was 16. I performed, now this is going to really date me, I performed at Expo in 86 in Vancouver. The difference in the temperament and the personality of the people, like the politeness, and like, I know that's this thing that always gets blown out for comedy's purpose. Oh, sorry, sorry. Like, and it irritates me when Americans do that, because I'm like, you know, it's actually kind of nice when people, you know, I want to like, it's actually kind of nice to have somebody hold the door for you once in a while. I also worked in Calgary. One of the companies that I did private training for had an office in Calgary, and I had to come here and do a bunch of training. And I learned a phrase that I thought was so cool. My friend goes, oh, you know what we say, it only takes 3 seconds to be polite. And I fell in love with that idea. Like, wow, it only takes a few seconds to be good. And like she said, yeah, and if everybody just took those 3 seconds, everything would be better. And it was such a simplistic idea, but it made sense. I was like, yeah, it doesn't take any time to do the right thing. So, but there's so many of them. Like, man, oh, there's so many great Canadianisms. I love that you call it Canadianisms. So many great things.
I got to ask you in your panel, is this a hot dog a sandwich? And you actually revealed that you're a bit of a hot dog fiend.
I'm a hot dog nerd.
What would be the Greg Ayers dog?
Oh, thank you for asking, because my Chicago friends are super mad about this. So I love Chicago hot dogs. I don't really like the banana pepper, but like the thing about the hot dog that's kind of cool is it's got a pickle on it. It's got a dill pickle on it, which is super cool. But the problem with putting a pickle on a hot dog is it goes and like shoots out of the bun the minute you eat it. So I've like this. You're about to find out what a hot dog nerd I am. So like I couldn't. That's not acceptable. I want a pickle in my hot or on my hot dog. So. One, I always toast my buns. Like, I always take the buns and, like, spray them with butter and put, like, if I'm being, like, basic, salt and pepper, but sometimes a little curry, garlic powder, just something to make the bun a little bit yummy. And then I always use garlic aioli mustard on the bottom and sauerkraut, like this Trader Joe's sauerkraut. But then I slice the dog, and then I take a wedge, a pickle wedge, and cut it into tiny strips and shove them in the slice and put the dog in the bun upside down so there's no way it can escape. Oh. No way it can escape.
We are breaking then, hot dog science
here. Yeah, I was just like, I went home and thought about it. I'm like, I gotta keep this pickle in the bun. Like, I've gotta get it. I gotta do it. So then after that, then you do one, like, whatever cheese you want. A little bit of Gouda on top of some garbage cheddar makes it good, and then maybe a little more sauerkraut and salt and pepper the top, and they disappear, like they're gone like that. And I also like, the old vegetarian in me is rolling over and screaming when I say that, but I do like Hebrew National beef franks, because they're like, they cook evenly, they're super hot to handle when you're trying to cut them to put the pickle in, but they cook really evenly, and I've never had like a gross hot dog when I eat the Hebrew National ones. But the Nathan's ones are okay, but I don't trust like the Meyer, the like off-brand hot dogs. Like, I've heard it's just meat garbage. But I do love hot dogs. I love that you can do them so many different ways. So I just had a slum dog at ENC. It's so good. Have you had one?
No, I don't know what a slum dog is.
I can't remember what they bread it with. It's a breaded hot dog with butter chicken sauce wrapped in naan.
Is that
it's
around
like,
here?
Yeah, it's at ENC at the Elephant Castle.
Guys.
Okay, we found our dinner spot.
It's so good, yeah. It's so good.
One of the last things we love to do with our guests is we love to play games. It's a very simple game.
Yeah,
it's just this or that. We're going to give an option. Just fire the first one you think of. Are you a lover or a fighter?
Oh, man. What if you love to fight? I'm older, so I'm going to say a lover.
Marvel or DC?
Oof. DC, because my best friend lives in DC. I don't read comic books. That's the thing most people don't know about me.
Star Wars or Star Trek?
Star Wars.
Would you rather be eaten by a horde of gerbils or a flock of ducks?
Oh, ducks. And as they were eating me, I'd say, look at all those chickens. Because I am vine trash.
Tacos or pizza?
Oh, taco pizza. Couldn't pick ever. I love pizza, but I love tacos.
Pirates or ninjas?
Oh, man. I'm supposed to say pirates because I'm in One Piece, but ninjas.
Burned to death or frozen to death?
Frozen to death.
Pancakes or waffles?
Waffles. That's tough.
Star Trek holodeck or Matrix head jack?
Head jack, for sure.
Would you rather wipe with sandpaper or poison ivy?
Wow. I don't think there's a right answer there. Sandpaper, I guess. Ooh.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs. Doggos.
And one of our most important questions might be harder because you don't read comic books. Who has the better booty? Peter Parker Spider-Man or Dick Grayson Nightwing?
Oh, man. I'm just going to say Spider-Man because... just because. That's the first answer. I don't know. I don't. I came from a time when American comic people hated manga. So it was why my job is a little raunchy punk rocker. Like, well, I hate comics. And from that point on, I could never make peace with them. And the funniest thing is the bass player in my band is like, okay, I have this Batman comic, and it's made to look like a manga. I really want you to read it. And, like, it's still not doing it for me. So I don't know why, but, like, I definitely don't bag on anybody else's love. My brother's a huge comic book fan. I just, like, it was at a time where I'm like, it was a this or that, and I chose manga, yeah.
It's been really interesting how the fandoms have started merging, especially within conventions. You're seeing a lot more anime presence within general Comic-Cons a lot more, like comic presence inside of anime cons.
Yeah, for sure, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I love it. I think the broader events we have, the more people we have. The more events we have, the more exposure all this gets, and the more of it we get. You know, like, I'm not one of those guys like, I want it to be underground. Underground just means nobody's getting paid. I think we need more money in this industry.
Now, tell our listeners where they can find you online.
I have a Twitter that I ignore. I have an Instagram where you can see lots of pictures of my dog and my two overfed prairie dogs, Laverne and Shirley. I think it's Monkey Vox is my... I have a Tumblr, but don't go there, because it was when I used to drink a lot, and it was my favorite drink recipes. It's called Requiem for a Dreamsicle. That's literally the name of it.
Do you have a favorite cocktail?
I did. The Creamsicle was one of my favorites, but there's also... So you take horchata, which is the rum chata, which is the horchata-flavored rum. And then you get butterscotch schnapps, and you do half and half, but... The glass, you salt rim it, and you lick half of it, you drink it, and you lick the other half, and it's like a dessert. And the minute you're done, you need 13 or 14 more of them. But like, it's the most heinous drink because it's so delicious, but you forget there is rum in it. And like, after doing that for a little bit, you're like, who peed in my pants? Like, you like lose track of how much fun you're having. So like, but yeah, I can't remember what we called that drink though. Yummy, is what it's called. But yeah, that and the creamsicle is an easy one because you can do it with just, you know, whipped cream, vodka, and orange juice, and it's just delicious. Like, but I don't drink liquor anymore. I'll drink a beer now and then, but I've been pretty sober for the last 2 years. Yeah. I got too good at it. I just slowed down. I had to pass the torch.
Greg, thank you so much for sitting down
thank
with
you
us.
Guys.
It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks. Bye-bye, guys.
I hope you guys had a fantastic show today. Thank you again to Greg Ayers for speaking with us. We are going to leave you there, folks. No outro song today. We will be back in the studio next week, 10:30 p.m. as always. I'm Andrew.
I'm Rob.
I'm Megan.
And I'm Kyle.
And we're your Thunder Geeks. We'll see you next week.
As the COVID-19 pandemic continues to spread, it is important to stay safe. Coronavirus is now in Canadian provinces and territories. By law, if you have traveled abroad recently, you must self-isolate. To do your part, stay home as much as possible and practice social distancing. Try to maintain at least 2 meters away from others. Encourage those who are sick or showing symptoms to self-isolate or to seek medical attention. As always, wash your hands frequently, avoid touching your face, and practice good respiratory etiquette by covering your coughs and sneezes. Clean regularly used surfaces. COVID-19 symptoms can mimic colds and flu and include fever, cough, and difficulty breathing. Infected individuals may also have mild symptoms or none at all. For up-to-date information, check reliable sources like your local health authority or the Public Health Agency of Canada.
Hello, annyeong, ni hao, konnichiwa. You're listening to Asian Pop Stop on CILU Radio 102.7 FM. I'm your host, Synthair, and I'll be taking you to the other side of the world to hear great music from South Korea, Japan, China, and other countries throughout Asia. We'll get started right away with the Korean-American indie artist, Ted Park, who recently... had his official debut, I believe, and we're going to actually be hearing two songs from him. First one is called They Don't Know. Second one is called Stupid Love. I believe Ted Park wrote the lyrics to both of these songs, and they are also both in English, so shouldn't have any trouble in understanding. I just want to be clear that today's show has a bit of a R&B and sometimes even a jazz vibe. I think think you're really going to like it. So, you know what? Let's give it a listen. This is Ted Park with They Don't Know and Stupid Love.
Make the correction, wasting time playing games. End of the day, all I see is my reflection. I know that they wanna be me, so they wanna see me, but they can't, don't want confrontation. They can talk about me, give a fuck about me, but me and broke, we have no relation. Every moment gets harder to breathe, yeah, it's harder to be so good when everyone is bad intentions. It gets harder to see that the ones who should be with you have to go through and learn their lesson. Everyone's your lover, everyone's your friend. Everyone will start, but not everyone will end. We all say we real, but too many just pretend. So let's be real instead. They don't know, they don't know, they don't know now. All the things you've been through on the low down. They'll ask where you home, where'd you go now. They don't know, they don't know, they don't know now. It's called my right fist. When you go further than local, people start getting so vocal. It's cool, I'm bound to go global. I'm tatting on my passport. See my life so fast forward. Haters mad and passport. I'm riding in these fast with the attitudes on crash course. Every moment gets harder to breathe. Yeah, it's harder to be still good when everyone is bad intention. It gets harder to see that the ones that should be with you have to go through and learn their lesson. Everyone's your lover, everyone's your friend. Everyone will start, but not everyone will end. We all say we real, but too many just pretend. So let's be real instead. Special, I know you want something that's forever.